sweet potato pie, and I shut my mouth. Gone, gone with the wind. There ain't nobody looking back again.
And welcome back to the Jeff Force Show on FM Talk 106.5, 34 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday morning. So to come on the program in the next hour, you want to stay tuned for State Senator Cam Ward and Steve Carey, who is running for mayor in Daphne. Like I said, we'll keep an eye on that race here on the Jeff Force Show. But joining us now, always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. Represents the 6th Congressional District. It's up and around Birmingham. Congressman Gary Palmer is on the line. Congressman, how are you this morning?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
Doing well. Everything. How's everything up your way? COVID-19, all of that. Still, is it still a kind of steady ship, if you will, in a better direction?
I think so. You know, the numbers change day to day, but I think they're going in the right direction.
Well, that's, you know, everybody's doing what they're supposed to. Hopefully it won't be much longer. A couple of things going on, obviously. I want to get you on to talk about this. I guess most importantly, I was there, actually. I was the guest of Congressman Mo Brooks at the State of the Union. And Nancy Pelosi, as soon as Trump's speech was over, kind of made a spectacle by ripping the official copy of the address, and you made some news last week wanting the Attorney General to determine whether or not that was a criminal act by Speaker Pelosi. Talk about that, if you would.
Well, you know, I thought it was at the time she did. I started looking into it along with Mike Johnson from Louisiana, and looked up the code, and there's no question that destroying, mutilating, defacing an official document is a felony, and it's subject to a fine and a prison term up to 3 years and removal from office. You know, they're trying to make the argument it was her personal copy. I have never heard of the Speaker of the House having a personal copy of the State of the Union.
Did that seem to you at the moment when that happened that she had been planning to do this the whole time? This was kind of contrived in some ways?
Premeditated.
Yeah.
I believe so.
Like they wanted to create this this scene, and it was going to be, I don't know, like some gesture she was making about Trump, that it wasn't just her so dissatisfied with the State of the Union and that she was, you know, going to rip up the speech just out of frustration. This was all kind of in the can.
Yeah. You know, it was all political, and it was all about the show and, you know, how they responded, how she responded behind him as he was delivering the speech was disrespectful. But the issue here, though, is the Constitution requires that the president deliver to the House and the Senate a message on the State of the Union. And for many, many years, it was not delivered as a speech. It was delivered as a written document. And when he turned and handed a copy to Mike Pence, the vice president, constitutionally, the vice president is the presiding officer of the Senate. So he officially delivered to the presiding officer of the Senate a copy of the State of the Union. And he turned and did the same thing to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, delivered his message to the House in its written form, and which I think she plans all along. Not, you know, that's a supposition on my part, but there is no supposition because millions of people saw her rip the speech in half.
Well, if I'm gonna get this straight, though, when the president delivers that copy of the speech to the House and hands it to the Speaker or the president of the Senate, Mike Pence, that is the official House of Representatives copy, not Nancy Pelosi's. It is the body's copy of the State of the Union address.
It is my understanding, and I believe if you were to check the archives, the historical archives, you would see the written documents delivered to the House and Senate in our historical archives. You won't see that one.
Well, or at least it'll be in pieces, perhaps. But is that what happens? They typically get delivered to the archives once they are delivered to the House and the Senate. And if you wanted to, as a member of Congress, let's say you wanted to review the official copy, would it be available to you?
The official copy, yes. You would have to make arrangements to see it, but it is a historical document. It belongs to the people of the United States, not to Nancy Pelosi.
Have you gotten any signals or any confirmation or anything from the Department of Justice on this?
No, I think it'll be a while before we get an answer back.
Well, we're keeping an eye on it. Let's talk about some politics. Everything's going on in the world right now. Watching the presidential election, something I'm curious about. We talked a lot about it maybe this time a year ago, but the idea that the House of Representatives is still in play, are you hearing any buzz? You get any sense? Are you even optimistic that the Republicans could regain the House?
I think we can regain the House, and I think the president is convinced of that as well. We only need to win 19 seats to regain the majority, and there's 53 Democrat seats that we think are competitive. There's 16 of ours that will be competitive, and I think we've got a legitimate shot at picking up the majority. So that's what I'm working on every day to make sure that we do.
It seems like a large part of it. It's going to be contingent on Trump's success, though, because the President of the United States on the top of the ballot would have coattails. And this is where Democrats, I think, sorely underestimated in 2016, gave Republicans all branches there with the White House, the House, and the Senate, that in some ways that Trump could surprise the quote-unquote experts but deliver the House to the Republicans.
Well, of the 53 Democrat seats that we've targeted, 30 of them are in districts that Trump won in 16. And I'll give you an example of a couple of things that have happened already. We had a special election on May 12th in California in a district that Hillary had won by 7 points. The Democrat who had resigned had won by 9 or 10. And honestly, in January, I wouldn't have given you a dollar for that. I just didn't think that was a winnable seat. Yet our guy, Mike Garcia, had 500 campaign volunteers, people who showed up at one time or another to help his campaign, and he won that by 10 points. And then we had another special election, I think it was June 23rd, in New York. It was the same day they had their primary. And it was a district that Trump had won handily, but our Republican congressman who had resigned had only won by about 1,100 votes. Our guy was running against the same Democrat who had run against the previous Republican, and the New York Times thought that that race would be so close that it could be a harbinger for November. Our guy won by 30 points. And what we're seeing is people who either haven't voted in years or never voted. We're seeing Democrats who believe that the Democrat Party has left them coming out and voting for Republicans. And I think I told someone a couple of weeks ago, Jeff, that the Democrat Party that you and I grew up with doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, it is a more of a very far left of center party. It's out of the American mainstream because the Democratic Party I grew up with, you know, would never embrace socialism because that was Soviet Union evil empire stuff. It may have been anti-Reagan, it may have been anti-Bush, but it was never into these ideologies. It just seemed foreign to the DNA of the country.
And it wasn't pro-Cuba. It wouldn't have been pro-Hugo Chavez or Maduro. The party that we're seeing now, especially with AOC and that crowd, is not not the party that, most people know about.
Joined,
they grew up with.
Joined by Congressman Gary Palmer here on FM Talk 106.5. Congressman, the direction of the campaign, it seems to, I don't know, it seems like Democrats are just throwing stuff out there at President Trump to see what sticks. But coming out of those conventions, right, you got to be feeling pretty, a little bit better. I don't know, you know, nothing's a sure thing, but the momentum seems to have shifted for the time being into Republicans' favor when we talk about what might happen on November 3rd.
Well, you know, the difference between our convention and theirs was the difference between hate and hope. But you saw the Democrats trot out all these Hollywood stars, and in our convention, you saw real people. These are people who, in some form or fashion, the Trump administration has been involved in their lives. And it goes from, you know, the loggers to the business owners to people who, through the First Step Act, have gotten a new lease on life by being released from prison, like Alice Johnson, who was in prison in Aliceville, Alabama. These are real stories, real people. And I think that this effort that the Democrats, they keep accusing the president of trying to divide us, but they're the ones that keep calling him a racist. And they're the ones who keep trying to divide us and stir us up. And what the president's doing in the African-American community and the Hispanic community is stuff that should have been done years ago to allow us to live together as part of one community. And I think it's going to be something that we'll see on Election Day.
Yeah, and the, you know, they are running, it just seems like the only page in their playbook is it's anti-Trump, and they may be for, you know, some of these goofy things like vote by mail or whatever, but there's not really a policy definition. It's just that, and this is their playbook, and it may not be enough for them, but we're just not Trump. And I you know, there's going to be people who are going to vote for that reason, but will that win you a presidential election is the question.
Well, I know there are people out there that don't like his tweets and things like that, but I think people need to look at what he's done. And I know there are people out there, evangelical Christians, for instance, that say, well, I just don't like how he acts. But look at what he does. And this is the most pro-life president that I can remember, maybe ever. And he's the most pro-religious freedom president I've ever been around. And you contrast that with the policies of a Biden Kamala Harris administration, and I really think you're really honestly voting for Kamala Harris. That it's the most extreme on abortion and the most restrictive on religious freedom. So you know, I'm speaking directly to Christians now. You need to take that into account and get out and defend your faith. On the economic side, there's never been anyone who's done as much in a short amount of time for the economy as this president. It's really unbelievable. That if I know what the Biden economy will look like, because we saw it under Obama Biden. The unemployment rate was up around 9%, and the only reason it was at that low was because they quit counting people who had stopped looking for work. So on the issues, the differences couldn't be more stark, Jeff.
Well, isn't it on when you talk about defending religious freedom and faith and in that, it's never been that evangelical Christians want to go out and vote for Trump because they look at him as a role model, which is the way the left is trying to make it, like that issue. It's that he is a guy, it seems to me, that's not going to interfere, tinker with or impose like a contraceptive mandate on the church. And he's going to let that be left alone and respect the dignity of these institutions, whereas Obama and, Biden, for that, you know, by extension, were more into trying to use that, whatever their roadmap for social engineering was.
Well, it's very destructive of Orthodox faith, the Obama-Biden administration was. And it would be, I think, even worse under a Biden-Harris administration. This is literally a crossroads election for this country. And I'm hoping and praying that there's still enough people that are well-educated enough to understand what's at stake here and not let an individual's personality cloud their judgment to the point that they can't see the good that he's doing for the country, and not just for a handful of people, but for everybody. And that's what I'm trying to get across to people is look at what's in the best interest for the future of the country as a whole and not get caught up in personalities.
Carson, we've got to leave it there. We're out of time, but thank you for making time for us this morning.
Well, I apologize for the interruptions with someone trying to call me, and then I was using map software I'm trying to get to Fayette, Alabama. So,
well, best of luck getting up there. You ought to know the area. You're from Hackleburg, right?
Yeah, I know how to get there.
well, we'll do this.
I'm a country boy.
We'll do it all again real soon. Thank you for making time for us. That was Congressman Gary Palmer of Alabama's 6th Congressional District joining us on the air here. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.